We are in Titus chapter 1. Let's go ahead and read that again. And maybe before I read, though, what translation? I use the English Standard. I prefer the American Standard, which nobody uses anymore, but I left that Bible on top of the car one day when I left the building, and it fell off, and I can't buy one like it anymore.
So, like crazy.
People, that's right. I was sowing the seed without even trying. But, so it seems like a lot of people are using the ESV, so I got that. I'm getting used to it. But what other translations are we having in here? Anybody use a different one?
I have the New American Standard.
You have the New American Standard, okay. Anybody using the New King James or the NIV?
New King James.
New King James. Okay, well, good, because a few of the words tonight that we go over, they're very similar, but there's some occasionally they use a different English word for the same thing. That's why I was asking this evening in the context of that. Let's read. I'll read Titus chapter 1, and we can have some more discussion.
And you're an ESV, right?
In the ESV. Okay. Paul, a servant of God and an apostle of Jesus Christ, for the sake of the faith of God's elect and their knowledge of the truth, which accords with godliness, in hope of eternal life, which God, who never lies, promised before the ages began, and at the proper time manifested in His Word through the preaching with which I have been entrusted by the command of our God and Savior, to Titus, my true child in a common faith, grace and peace from God the Father through Christ Jesus our Savior. This is why I left you in Crete, so that you may put what remained into order and appoint elders in every town as I directed you. If anyone is above reproach, the husband of one wife, and his children are believers and not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination. For an overseer, as God's steward, must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant, or quick-tempered, or a drunkard, or a violent, or greedy for gain, but hospitable, a lover of good, self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. He must hold firm to the trustworthy word as taught, so that he may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine and also to rebuke those who contradict it. For there are many who are insubordinate, empty talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision party. They must be silenced, since they are upsetting whole families by teaching for shameful gain what they ought not to teach. One of the Cretans, a prophet of their own, said, "Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. This testimony is true. Therefore, rebuke them sharply that they may be sound in the faith, not devoting themselves to Jewish myths and the commands of people who turn away from the truth. To the pure, all things are pure, but to the defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure. But both their minds and their consciences are defiled. They profess to know God, but they deny Him by their works. They are detestable, disobedient, unfit for any good work." So, by way of review, Titus was, and I don't know, Timothy says it was a young man. Paul refers to him, "Don't let anybody despise your youth." I don't recall reading anything about Titus's age or kind of station in life. Does anybody else? But he was an evangelist, like Timothy was.
Similar to Timothy, he calls him his true child in the faith.
That's true.
Since he's younger than Paul.
Right, from that wording, I would too. Whether or not he was as young as Timothy, don't know. And he was very active, right? Remember we talked about in the long journey through how many imprisonments Paul had. We also saw Timothy recurring and Titus recurring and being involved with Corinth and here in Crete and ultimately in Dalmatia, of all places. And it turns out we had somebody who's actually visited there.
Yeah.
Not here yet this evening, but so Titus was this active evangelist, and Timothy, just like he wrote Paul, just like he wrote to Timothy, is writing to Titus to give him encouragement. And what was one of the problems, the generic problems that Titus was facing here in Crete?
People preaching falsely for their own gain.
Okay, so if the people were preaching falsely for their own gain, and there was a pretty degenerate society too that he was in. Maybe not so much explicit about maybe some of the sexual type immorality like we read in Romans, but in terms of the corruptness and the greed that comes across here. And I hadn't thought about it in the past, or if I had, I'd forgotten. But as we're studying we'll get quickly into the qualifications for elders here. It kind of stands in sharp contrast to the picture of the people of Crete and why it would be so important to lay this out for Titus to pick these men with these qualifications, because you wouldn't just happen upon them like that in that society. Not sure you'd happen upon them in any society, but in contrast to the folks in Crete. So that was the point. He left them in Crete, right? He says, for this purpose, I left you in Crete. And where or what extent was Titus supposed to be appointing elders? Where was he supposed to appoint them? Yeah, like every city or every town or every church, depending. Mine says every town. I think some of them say every city. So, he was going to go around into the different cities there, the congregations, and he was going to appoint men who met these qualifications. And just some background I was reading, Crete was, I think, if I remember correctly, it was the largest island, maybe with the exception of Sicily, in the Mediterranean. It was large. And something like, I guess the Greeks, or maybe it was the Romans, referred to it as Crete of the 100 cities. There were a lot of cities there. And I don't know this necessarily means every single city without exception, but he was supposed to appoint them in every town. So everywhere there were qualified men. So it was actually a lot of work for Titus. Never thought about that in the past, just the level of effort to go to all of these cities and appoint these men. When you studied 1 Timothy chapter 3, did you spend, I'm not sure how the teacher chose to approach it, did you spend much time on the qualifications of an elder? Well, then this won't be too much duplication. And if you did, this will be reviewed. So either way, we've got my bases covered. But the two places, right, that talk about the qualifications for an elder is 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1. We happen to be in Titus 1 tonight, and so I thought that would be a profitable way for us to spend our time, as well as the latter part of the chapter there where it talks about the Cretans. So what's the first of all, he talks about appointing elders in every town. What does that word elders mean?
Older.
Okay, that is part of it. It's an older person. And I don't know Greek, but I know enough. I know how to read what people say about it, and then I can see how it sometimes matches like English words. Mm-hmm. Okay, not always. Presbyteros is that word, which is what English word do we get? We didn't use it much in modern, but 100 years ago they did it in English. Presbyter, right? Presbyterian church. So it is something that in bygone eras people apply to a rank within the church, but they didn't call it elders like it's translated here. But we're familiar with the term elders amongst those that we worship. But it was older, and not only older, but a position of authority. Let's go to Matthew 15:2. We'll see how this was used, not of this specific, office within the church, but to show that it had to do with, it wasn't merely older people, is what I'm getting at. It was older and influential. Matthew 15:2. Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem and said, "Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat." That's that same, the same word. Over in Matthew 21:23, speaking of Jesus, when he entered the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came up to him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things? Who gave you this authority?" The chief priests and elders. Okay, so when you keep reading in the Gospels about the chief priests and elders, it's the same same word. Now, that was the Jewish system. I'm not saying it's the same qualifications, but it is. It isn't just an old guy. It's people who were respected, had a position of authority. And we do see that used not only here where it talks about qualifications, but in Acts chapter 15, for instance, in the church in Jerusalem. Can you read that one for me, Joel? Acts 15, 6.
Okay. See if it pops up there. Excellent. The apostles and the elders were gathered together to consider this matter.
Okay. So that was that Jerusalem council where they talked about what to do with the Greek Christians, but the apostles and elders. So it is a position. Here in Titus, even though we see another word that we find in the scriptures referring to this office, what's the other term here? A couple of verses down, I believe, in Titus, that's used to describe these same men, but it's not elder.
Overseer.
Okay. So what's the elder, which is also equal to presbyter? Peter. How do you spell it? Presbyter. And then what was it? Overseer? What's the footnote saying on that one?
Is it shepherd? I don't know. I don't know.
Bishop.
Okay.
Bishop. So, you know, this is just the way the modern translations translate what in some of our, maybe probably the traditional King James would have said bishop. It's the same. Slightly different aspect. This has to do with the oversight aspect. This does sort of more of that respectfulness and leadership. But they're describing the same. It's not two separate offices, right? It's the same office. What's the first qualification then that we read about for an elder in Titus chapter 1?
Above
reproach. So the elder is supposed to be above reproach. How would you put that in your own words?
Blameless.
Blameless is another translation. Actually, blameless is in the New King James and the New International Version say blameless. English Standard Version and New American Standard say above reproach. So blameless, that means he's perfect? No, that's why it's kind of helpful to look at the above reproach as well as the blameless. But is that somebody that you can lay a charge to and it sticks, right? It's somebody who is this high character. Mm-hmm. In the positive sense of the word. Not he is a character like we negative sense. But is above reproach or blameless. What's the next qualification?
Husband of one wife.
The husband of one wife. And let's see, and anybody have a different translation for that? Maybe put them in a different order. Husband of one wife. There we go. What's the footnote? Anybody, if you have an English Standard or maybe a New American, there's
man of one woman.
Yeah, man of one woman or one woman man. That's not very good flowing English, but that's like if you just kind of did the Google Translate the Greek? You know, one woman, man. Anybody have passages or passage in or concepts in the New Testament or the Old Testament that you find difficult? I do. Well, for instance, baptism for the dead. It's a little difficult for me. Spell this. Get my own. Do you have any, or am I the only one here?
One you mentioned is certainly one.
Yeah. So I mentioned that because, you know, some things are more difficult to understand. Some things are not, but people make them difficult to understand. What's that? So, actually, some of our younger people are not here, but we have a few of you. This is a passage that sometimes has caused controversy, and I want to address it a bit. Not to stir things up, but so that if you haven't heard of this before, the time to study these things is when you're not in the throes. You do need to study when you're selecting elders. But the time to settle it in your mind is just like anything. Settle it before you're faced with the the temptation, is this a sin or not? Settle it before you get into discussions. Now, this thing of the husband of one wife, and I've heard it personally over the years, old enough now, actually relate to my own personal experience, but also in reading some of the materials preparing, one of the first interpretations that I read from some guys, probably Lutheran or Presbyterian, is he immediately says, this does not mean he has to be married, it just means it's good if he's married. Well, I don't know how he gets that out of this. Wouldn't this seem to say it must? Husband of one wife, if you're not married, you're not the husband of one wife. The husband of zero wives. Also, there's another qualification a couple of verses down, that if this man is of the high moral character and above reproach that he should have, would of necessity require him to have a wife. What other requirement is listed for him?
Children.
Having children and boys. So that kind of, you know, again, they combine that with the above reproach. This rules out the kind of Catholic concept with their priests of not being married, right? But where it gets in over the years that I've seen the biggest controversy, that people sometimes make a controversy of it, is if the person is widowed or they're divorced and they're presently unmarried, is he the husband of one wife? I don't know. He was. Is he that? And they had children. Is he, you know, you have to think about these things ahead of time. What is your understanding of the scripture? Now, the safe, in a sense, way is to only select men who are currently married. But it might not be safe to enforce that approach on you and make it a contention of faith. This one, most of the time I can give pretty good reasons for it. You see, this one, this possible interpretation of whether they were married, you know, I'm not trying to rattle anybody, but I'd rather you hear it now so you can think of it. The next one is, if he's widowed or divorced and remarried, is he the husband of one wife? Well, he's the husband of one wife at the time, but he had another wife, and in years gone by, I've heard people argue that. You know, guys, first wife died, and he's remarried, and his kids are faithful, and we'll get to in a minute. But is he the husband of one wife? Another one that I've heard that sometimes people, well, if that's not what it means, then it could only mean he can't be a polygamist. Well, that actually might make sense. You can't have two wives. Then the objection to that line of reasoning is, well, we read about polygamy in the Old Testament, right? Including some noble last Sunday servants of God, David, Abraham. But in the New Testament, do we really read about it? I can't recall reading about it. And actually, I did some brief research. It's not conclusive, or at least it's not comprehensive. It was like a Princeton article written by some sociologists, so it wasn't even Bible-believing people, but they were pointing out that in the Greek and Roman times, actually, polygamy had gone out of the way, and they were fairly monogamous, immoral in many ways, but monogamous societies. However, I think what really helps kind of inform us of this, and to me makes the most sense, is out of all these recent translations I looked at, English Standard, New King James, New American Standard, and New International, three of those four put husband and one wife. The footnote is one woman, man. But the New International Version puts faithful to his wife. And the husband of one wife, that would automatically, I think, rule out polygamy. It would rule out, but it also would fit the case where he was a widower and he remarried. If he's faithful to his wife, what it rules out basically is what was prominent in all those societies at that time, which is married and carrying on with somebody else, right? Because he's not faithful to his wife. And so, To me, of all these things, that actually makes the most sense. When it's a husband of one wife, is faithful, not only married to just a single woman, but he's faithful to her. And it would seem to fit all the other terms of the character of the man involved. But it's something to think about. And if you haven't settled on a defensible understanding of that, do it before the issue comes up and ask to. The next one, what's the next qualification then? It's also one that actually has some variation of people's emphasis.
Believing children.
Believing children. Let's see. Now, Titus and Timothy use slightly different. So, children are believers, or believing children, here in Titus. Children are believers. And it actually continues to kind of expand on having children who believe or are believers and not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination. Or New King James says dissipation or insubordination. Or discipline, dissipation and rebellion. So they believe and they're not unruly in a really bad sense. Not just like, they ran around in the playground a little bit and got their church socks dirty. No, they are dissipated. We've all been there with our kids. So having faithful children. So first question becomes, how many? Children's a plural word in English, right?
Yes.
Where is it? How many children do you have, Joel?
We have four children.
Okay. Eric?
Three.
I have three. How many children does Derek have?
One.
Wait. I said children. We understand in English, but in that sense, that even one means a single would qualify. But over the years, I've heard people quarrel over this, that a man who was being considered only had one child. The child was faithful, they weren't unruly, subject to dissipation, but children. Now, there are some other translations. Let's go on translate passages that use this same word. Let's go to Matthew 9 and verse 2. In Matthew 9 and verse 2, when Jesus is speaking to this paralytic, and behold, some people brought to him a paralytic lying on a bed. And when Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, "Take heart, my son, your sins are forgiven." And that word son is the same one that here says children. And that's how many people were there. It was only one paralytic. It wasn't like a plurality of paralytics. Turning one chapter later, Matthew chapter 10 and 21, this one's even more striking to me. Matthew 10:21, brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child, and children will rise up against parents and have them put to death. Child and children, it's the same word, yet the translators, putting it into good flow of English, one is child singular, the father delivering the children are against their parents, and it's both. So I don't claim to be, if somebody could make a strong argument from the they knew more about, but it really does seem like, while in English, children can carry the connotation of plural, it doesn't, I don't think it's a necessity, even when we use Derek as an example, and probably some other members, he's the one I could think of that has a single child, we still talk about, when we ask, we say, how many children do you have? We don't say, do you have a child or children? We understand that a word can be used plural and in a singular sense. But there are people who in the past and probably in the future would make an issue of that. And so I'll bring it up so that you can, if you haven't already resolved it in your mind, you can. And even if you have, you know that it may come up and be prepared to defend the scriptures in your understanding or be prepared to say, I believe it means one thing, but it's not a point of faith to me, and I'm not going to fight with somebody over that. Now, the other related to this is, or let me do this guess what the teacher's thinking thing. What's the other area of contention that people have over elders and their children, besides plurality?
What does believing mean?
Okay, so close. It's a little more...
Okay.
That's true. What does believing mean?
Yeah,
it demons, has to do with...
The demons believe.
What's that?
The demons believe.
Sure. The one I heard again is, you know, when, I mean, you have a lot of control over them when you're a household, right?
Right.
When they're 31, it's a little more difficult, right, Tom? Or 19, as I'm finding out, right? Probably worse at 19, and I'm hoping it's worse. I hope it gets better by 31. It is, what if the man has children and they're not faithful? You know, is now, Timothy, let's go over to Timothy, or we can look over in 1 Timothy 3, the similar passage over there, it says of him, that this man must manage his own household well with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? It's about how he... I mean, Paul, when he writes to Timothy, makes the point of this, if their kid, how he rules his household is a qualification. It's indicative of how he'll oversee the church. And so... I still don't think that's a concrete thing that says, well, they're out of the home, so you're no longer overseeing them, because how you raise them has a lot of influence on how they end up. But 1 Timothy 3 does show the emphasis is on how he's conducting himself and influence on the children. People didn't get hung up on the plural. One child's faithful, one child's not. Yeah. You get to somehow the plurality of this stuff. It seems like we singular and plural gets to be, over the years, the devil has used that to separate people. This one says believers. One of the translations, New International, says faithful. And actually, that does lead to one other possible view of this, which is, here this gives an implication, probably what it means, of belief in God, right? But if we're looking at Timothy and the kids are, you know, you're ruling your house well, and let's use the example of younger children now. When they're faithful, who are the little kids faithful to? They're faithful to the parents. So if it's really the children are faithful, it may be that you're ruling your house well and your kids are minding you because you're good with ruling the house. So we've kind of got off on these tangents here, but just because these are ones over the years that people have had disagreements about, of course, if they're the children young, old enough to be Christians, are Christians, then it removes any gap. Nobody would say that. They're disqualified on that point. It's only an issue to get out of the home. And if they've fallen away, as we use that term, does the man still have children that are believers? The next qualification there. Now we move from the ones that, at least in my experience, I haven't heard the same level of quibbling about, is not arrogant, or actually, it repeats one now. What one does it repeat? After children are believers.
Above reproach.
I didn't notice that before until I was preparing for that. I thought that was interesting. This must be important. It's the second time, the above reproach. Then what's the next one after that? Get to another unique one. Not arrogant is what the English Standard Version says. What does the... Whoever had the New King James?
It says a steward of God.
What's that?
A steward of God.
Well, steward, but it also says something... Besides the steward, that he's not arrogant, he's not self-willed, is what I have.
Right.
I'm not self-willed. I mean, they're kind of different. They're kind of two different views of the English word views of the same thing. Right? The guy who's arrogant just thinks he knows it all. So obviously, since I know it all, it ought to be done my way, right? That's not arrogant. I just know it all. So, you know, and if it's going to be my way, that's the self-will. And that's, it's the negative. That's not the characteristic. A man qualified to be an elder will not exhibit that quality. What's the next one?
Quick-tempered?
Yeah, not quick-tempered. So it was interesting. You can kind of classify these. Some of them are positive traits, and some of them are like the negative. It's like what they can't be. And this one's not quick-tempered. Now, whether we can understand all of it or not, this is what the Spirit through Paul told us. But I think we can still... Why would it be important, even just our limited human reasoning, that an elder not be quick-tempered?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Why is it important, and it's just a practical matter, that an elder not be quick-tempered?
You're trying to resolve all issues. You're not supposed to, you're not trying to make them worse.
That's a sure way to make things worse, isn't it? Is if you've got a quick temper. And it's also a sure way, these two, that people won't approach you with things. Mm-hmm. Right? We should be able to approach an elder. And a nice thing about a congregation that has quite a few, like we do, is, you know, different people have different personalities, and I don't know my wife, and we each feel, and not always about the same, but more comfortable. Now, we don't feel uncomfortable talking to any of our elders, but we feel more comfortable with some of them, just our personalities. Some of the men, you know, and I think that's probably true of most other people. Also, some people you just know a little more socially than others. But if they were quick-tempered or arrogant, boy, you wouldn't want to approach an elder like that for assistance. What's the next... Not it's another not one. What else are they not supposed to be?
A drunkard.
Not a drunkard or given to much wine, which of course is the same thing as a drunkard. I find it interesting because having grown up, my parents being Christians and eventually I was old enough I was baptized. I was in the workplace I've been around people who were some of them heavily, but it wasn't just part of the culture that I was around. So it almost feels to me like, why would you have to say that? But, you know, most people don't come from that kind of background. They need to be reminded. These Cretans, they had lots of problems. And so they need to be told, look, you're going to have a man be an overseer, an elder. He can't be given to much wine. He can't be a drunkard. What's the next one in the list? Also, it seems almost like a duh.
Violent?
Yeah, not violent. Again.
And I think those last three are pretty much tied to each other. Quick-tempered, drunkard, and violent. Those seem to go hand in hand.
Yeah, they all kind of the same sort of character.
Character, yeah.
That's our character, yeah. They're all kind of, and they're all the negative. Not that. Then the next one, what's the next one? It's another not.
Greedy,
not sordid gain, or my translation says greedy gain, but I think yours says sordid gain. One of them, I think, says the old King James says filthy lucre. And it's not just that the person is greedy. When I researched this, that's the idea of unlawful gain, which was a problem apparently in Crete. Kind of see that in the second half of the chapter, as well as just reading about the history of that island. These people, there was some Greek guy, and I don't know, Polybius, that means anything to you, it didn't mean, except, you know, just like Aristotle and these old-timey guys, so people who read that kind of lofty stuff, this guy was quoted as saying of the Cretans, they are so given to making gain in disgraceful and acquisitive ways, that among the Cretans alone of all men, no gain is counted as disgraceful. So no matter how they got it, they liked money so much. And then this guy Plutarch said that the Cretans stuck to money like bees to honey. So that's catchy for modern ad agency.
I'm safe there.
So they were not only greedy; they were greedy to the point they just do whatever. That's not the elder. I mean, these guys needed to be told this since they were in a society where they had, I'm sure, Christians that were converted that didn't have that characteristic, and maybe were still struggling with that sin, and that's a quality that must not be in an elder. It's the next one. Now we get to positive. This is good. Move off the negatives, get to some positives. Is that?
I said, okay, let's move on. Hospitable.
That's right. And I guess every translation that I looked at used that word. What's hospitable?
Hospitals, even to strangers.
Okay, even to strangers. But what's it mean to be hospitable?
It means to be giving of what you have to anybody.
Okay, yeah.
I'd say inviting people into your home, literally.
Right.
Not so much entertaining, but that's what we think of when we have people in our home. Let's entertain people. But it's just to have a peer level group of folks in and just have them over for a meal, perhaps, or just to sit and talk.
Right.
Just to be have them in and be comfortable in your environment as
it's
well.
It's kind of interesting because that's like the opposite of this one here. If you're the greedy, it's always opposite. Hospitable. We'll quickly move to, for sake of time, lover of good or lover of what is good. You know, this man, he just appreciates things that are good. You know, sometimes people are follow the rules, but maybe they don't have a love for it. This guy's a lover of good. Self-control. Maybe it's one of them said sober. He's got control of himself. It would counteract these others that Joel summarized for us and grouped for us. A self-controlled person would not be involved there. Upright. And the other some translations say just. Wow. Sort of the upright is more the character, and the just is how it manifests itself when he's dealing with others. You know, this guy is stand up guy, is what we might say in the court.
Principled.
What's that?
Principled.
And principled, exactly. He's going to do it because it's the right thing.
Honest
would include, honesty would be included there. I mean, I like movies when there's a character in there who's the upright guy, you know?
And he wins.
And he wins. That's, it's always going to be at the end, so in the end you feel better about that. Holy or devout is another characteristic of a man who's qualified to be an elder. Self-controlled, I think I might have jumped. And then must hold firm to the trustworthy word, so that he may be able to give instruction and sound doctrine and also rebuke those who contradict it. So he's got to be hold fast to the word, but it tells us why. Why is that so important for the elder? And that's so that he can teach others, encourage others. So all those words were used in the same concept as different translations. And to rebuke or convict. So kind of a positive and then the negative to people. And that rebuke, I found that was interesting. For sake of time, we won't be able to go to all the other places. But that rebuke word is used lots in it. It's not just like, Tom knows the word. You're wrong. I'm going to show you right here. Look, you're wrong. You know, it's not, that's what I tend to think of the word rebuke. You know, getting on with somebody. The concept is you are grounded in the word so you can just convincingly. Now, you may not change the other person, but there's no doubt when the elder is done on that point of contention from the word, it's clear. The person might reject it, but he has established that. It's also sometimes used in the scriptures to expose things. John 3:20 says, "For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his works should be exposed." It's really the same word that we used here for rebuke, but the emphasis is on just exposing it, what was wrong. In 1 Corinthians, it was talking about having order about your prophesying and your tongues. It says that if all prophesy and an unbeliever or outsider enters, he is convicted by all. He is called to account by all. Again, convict is the same one here. Rebuke. People can see the truth of the matter. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean that they will change their behavior, but the elder is grounded in the word and he's able to rebuke or to convict, to reprove those. I rushed through it so I wouldn't run out of time. And now I have like 2 minutes left. So, what did I miss?
I can't cover all that.
Okay. Anyway, just pick one thing.
This last section where he says, must hold firmly the trustworthy word as taught. Mm-hmm. So he has to know what the truth is, not be willing to give it on, as I heard one person say, I think he'll find me very, very stubborn and narrow-minded on these issues. And he just said, because that's the way it is. And he needs to know that so that when he is presented or other people are presenting error, we say, well, that doesn't match with what the truth is.
Right.
Is this the same verse that I think that says, you know, we can convict the gainsayer? Yeah, that's an old King James thing.
Right. I'm not sure, but it's the same concept, but it's not the same
path. Yeah, I think it probably is.
And we didn't get the last few verses, but if you read them or read them again later about these Cretans, you could see why. I mean, these Cretans,
they would need some instruction.
But we have problems, so we need men.
Yeah.
Our problems may be more emphasis in one area of problem than theirs were.
We don't have problems.
Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you.